We're learning an interesting question of Gemara and Beit, Daf Chafav and Beit, about whether or not there's a Yesh Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos or Ein Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos. Can an object be partially Muksa, could be Muksa for only part of the Shabbos, or no, whatever the status of that object was during Beit HaShemashos, that remains the status during the rest of Shabbos. So the Poskim, the Gemara doesn't talk about this particular example, but the Poskim talk about with regards to the Ismail, the knife that's used for a mila, that's really the focus. Not so relevant for us what the status of the Ismail is during the rest of Shabbos. I don't think anyone here is a mole. But what's most relevant for us is really the two examples that brought at the end about a situation of Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, and you want to use a matzah for one of the Lecha Mishnah. So Friday night, so it's Friday night, leads into Shabbos day. Shabbos day is Erev Pesach. Matzah Shabbos is Leil Seder. So we know that you're not allowed to have any matzah at a certain point, from even 30 days beforehand, but still at a certain point you can have matzah even more so in Erev Pesach. Or the flip side, maybe even using challah at some point, challah is also Aser. But Friday night, both matzah and challah were mutter. There's no Iser of having chametz or matzah in a serious way on Leil Shabbos. So do we say, since Leil Shabbos, the matzah or the challah respectively were both mutter, not muksa, I could use it for one of the loaves of bread now on Shabbos? Or no, would we say that the muksa status will kick in once the issur of eating matzah or the issur of eating chametz takes effect on Erev Shabbos? That's one example we'll try to get back to. Second example they talk about, with regards to certain types of pots and pans, some pots and pans are muksa. Now, we don't know this always. We're looking through the drawer or the pantry looking for something. So some pots and pans are mutter on Shabbos because you could use it to store things. But a frying pan, for example, would be aser because frying pans are used pretty exclusively for frying pans, for cooking. You can't cook on Shabbos. Yontif, it wouldn't be muksa. You're allowed to cook on Yontif. But Shabbos, a frying pan would be muksa. So if I'm trying to get to something behind the drawer, I'm trying to get like a big pot which could store something, I need to move the frying pan. The frying pan is actually muksa. But what if, let's say, I use a frying pan to store something, which was not normal, but I decide to put some food in the frying pan. I put it in the refrigerator. I don't know. I made some pancakes. I left it in the frying pan in the refrigerator. So now the food in the frying pan is mutter. And by way of that, the frying pan is also mutter because there's food in it. But after I empty it out, will I say, for the rest of Shabbos, does that frying pan remain not muksa? Or no? Do you say, well, once there's no purpose anymore, does it now revert back to being something muksa? So let's go through the sugya and try to come back and answer some of these questions. So as I mentioned before, that the Gemara itself asks this question, whether there's muksa l'chatzi Shabbos or there is no muksa l'chatzi Shabbos. So before explaining how we paskin in the Gemara, let's go ahead on the question that Poskim asked about the Ismail. The Ismail, again, is the knife, the small knife they use, the mole uses. Well, maybe Dr. Simai might be a mole shtickle. So, okay. So the Ismail that's used for the Mila, so that, what's the status on Shabbos? Is that considered muksa or not considered muksa after the mila is performed? Certainly for the mila, you're allowed to use it. There's a mitzvah, there's a requirement to give a mila of the 8 days on Shabbos. The Yom HaShemini, the Gemara says, Pazik says, and the Gemara says, Afilu b'Shabbos. So how do you give a mila without using the Ismail? So it must be, obviously, the Ismail is allowed to be used. But when it's over, there's no purpose, there's no use anywhere for the Ismail, what do you do with it? So there are four shitas that we find in the Rishonim, and the poskim, what the muksa status is of the Ismail. So let's go the first, the most extreme. I don't think it was in any of the marmakomas that I gave you, but the Darchei Moshe quotes from Maharil. The Maharil says, the moment the meal is over, you have to just chuck it, drop it, throw it, get rid of it. It's finished, everything's done, you can't touch it anymore. It's completely muksa the moment that the meal is over. That's the most extreme, that's the sheet of the Maharil. The next shita is the Ramban, the Magid of Ram's understanding of the Ramban. The Magid of Ram writes, and this is in the Mishnah Berurah, those who got a chance to see him, number 6, the Magid of Ram's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah to say, "Be'ikra din achdaito," this is number 6, it's the last four lines of number 6, "achdaito sheyesh lahachmir." The Magid of Ram is of the opinion, "Sheba'od she'izmal biyado," so long as the Ismail is in your hand, Lo yanichenu miyado, you don't have to just drop it like the Maharil says and just wherever it is it goes. Ein lo yanichu miyado ad sheyanichu b'makom hamishtamer. You're allowed to move it. You're allowed to transport it to a place that's protected. Someone told me he's watching the, we had a Mila Bris in the shul yesterday, and someone was watching very carefully in light of the shiur we're having today, and he said that the moment he was finished, before putting anything else back, he took the Ismail, wrapped it up very, very nicely, and stored it in a safeware. They keep the Ismail very careful because they're doing surgery here. So they want to make sure it's completely smooth, it's unscathed. So you're allowed to take that Ismail when you're finished, according to the Magen Avraham, and put it into an area that's very protected. Or you could carry it all the way back to your house as well. Anything that's muksa, if you have it in your hand, you actually have to continue to carry it, transport it wherever you want. While the Ma'aril says you must drop it right away, the Magen Avraham says, no, you're allowed to transport it again once it's in your hand, wherever you want. Now this is really based on a Tosfos and Beta, Daf Gimel Amud Beis. We learned this a number of, I don't know, months ago when we did Daf Gimel Amud Beis. And there's a Tosfos on the very, very top that says, the person accidentally picked up something that's muksa, im hischil, he's talking about a case, if you pick something up, bishvil tzarech legufo, a hammer. A hammer, I can't just move a hammer for no reason. A hammer is muksa. But let's say I need a hammer, legufa, I need to open up some nuts. I'm allowed to, that's tzarech gufa. Or let's say the hammer's in my chair, I need to sit down in the chair, that's tzarech lemakomo. So if it's a kli shemlachto le'iser, it's a kli, but main purpose is usur, but still a kli. As opposed to a rock, which isn't even a kli. A rock has no purpose. But a kli shemlachto le'iser, like a hammer, it's a kli, but it's a purpose. If I use it for a permissible reason, I'm allowed to move it. But now I crack open the nut. So now what, I have to drop it right away? Or I move it out of my chair. I move it, I throw it across the room. So Tosu says, "Im hischil l'tatlo b'shvil tzarech gufo olu mekomo." If I lift up an item such as a hammer to for a purpose that's permitted, mutter l'holicho afilu b'chadro im yirtza. I could, once I pick it up b'heter, I could carry it wherever I want. That's exactly what the Magen Avraham says, that once you use the Ismail for a heter purpose, even though the purpose is no longer, I'm allowed to transport it to wherever I want. So the question is, how come the Ma'aril says you got to drop it right away? Meal is over, just drop it. So any suggestions of what that chilik might be? Why everyone agrees, by a kli shemlachto lehet le'iser, I pick up the hammer for a het the purpose, once it's in my hand, I carry it wherever I want. Ma'aril says it doesn't work by nizma. But Barabbim maybe? Could be, okay. Maybe Barabbim you have to be more careful because of the zilzal.
The hammer, you can have more nuts. I mean, for a bris, you know how many there are before Shabbos.
So, okay, it could be that you have no idea. It's unlikely, very unlikely, that it's going to be another bris meal that you're unaware of. So it could be just the das. Mux is very much about das, oftentimes what you had in mind in the beginning. That could be an approach about the gavr's das, the mo's das.
Also, it's a muktzeh machmas
kis. Ah, excellent. In terms of the object itself, a muktzeh machmas cheson kis, something that you're concerned about it getting damaged, is a much more intrinsic type of muksa. And therefore, the halachas are more serious. If I have an Ismail on my chair, I can't move that because tzarech lemakomo. I'm not allowed to. Only by a muksa that a kli shemlachto le'iser is there heter to use it or to move it for if it's in my way. But Ismail, machmas cheson kis, have a lot more stringencies, and therefore perhaps one of the stringencies are also, if you carry it beheter, still doesn't mean you're allowed to transport it to your room or to your house, you have to just drop it right away. So that's part of the machlokas between the Ma'aril and the Magen Avraham, what you do when it's over. But they both agree that when it's over, there's muksa. The question is, do you still have an extra heter to carry it to the very next place?
So that means there is muksa lechal to Shabbos, no?
According to these right now, they assume, but it's not really Chatzi Shabbos. The understanding, we'll get back to that point, remind me, actually I'll say it now. So it sounds like there is Muksa Machma L'Chatzi Shabbos, that the first half of Shabbos, before the Mila, I was able to use it, it was a Muksa, and now it's over, it now becomes a Muksa, it turns into Muksa. The understanding is that the Ismail was never actually not Muksa, it was always Muksa. The hammer was Muksa also before Shabbos. But there was a special heter to use it for a few seconds. I was able to move it out of my chair. I was able to use it to open the crack, the nuts. But intrinsically, Bein HaShmashos, the hammer was muksa. The Ismail Bein HaShmashos was actually muksa. It wasn't muksa half the day, not muksa the other half. It was always muksa, but there's a moment of time where it was permitted. They just did away from muksa, but not that we uprooted the muksa. It was just a leniency that was allowed for those few moments.
So you don't go by the thought that you never planned to use the hammer, but you did plan to use the izma.
Yeah, because that was matter? It was momentarily, it was temporary. If, let's say, it's a struggle between the das, how the das works, and how intrinsic the item is. What their understanding is that it's not about the das, it's about the object itself. And the object itself is a davar muksa. I can use it for a few moments for the mila, but zeu, after that, it's no longer allowed as muksa. What can I do with the muksa item? Either you drop it, because it's muksa machmas cheson kis, or you're allowed to transport it. There is that's all for the tzarach of the mitzvah. It's all part of the heter of muksa. So now, there is a third shita now.
So you said it seems like there's a half from the last day.
But in reality, it's not. Now, the third shita is the Yam Shel Shlomo. Yam Shel Shlomo is a chiddush. Yam Shel Shlomo oftentimes has a lot of chiddushim. We don't oftentimes accept him l'alacha. He's brought down by the poskim, but oftentimes he's rejected. But Yam Shel Shlomo's understanding is that he says, again, it's a chiddush, that the Ismail is not a muksa machmas cheson kis. He says, if you wanted, you could use it to cut your vegetables, to cut your meat. There's many heterim for this. He writes in our sugya here, he says, Beina shmashos, you had in mind already for the mila. And, I'm looking for the line here. Right, aval hai Ismail, this Ismail, roi le'alechel, but roi le'alechel, you could use it to eat with. Velasos bo tashmish hamutter. And therefore, already been ashmashos, it was not considered davar muksa. Now, certainly not something that any of us would want to do. No, you wouldn't want to eat from such a knife, nor would you want to have a knife that was used for vegetables to be cutting one's child. You want to keep things separate. But the Yam Shel Shlomo said that in theory, since it has the ability to be used for other items, it's not called muksa, and even after the meal is over, move it wherever you want. It's like a regular knife in your drawer. Now, the Taz takes issue. Taz says, that doesn't make any sense. The Adam, it's Pashut. The Adam makbid harbe, shelo lishtamesh be'oso ismal, midiachwina. Everyone's makbid not to use it for anything else. Shelo yiskalko. Like I pointed out yesterday, Rabbi Kaplan, when he finished the mila, the first thing he did, everything is out there, there was blood, and there was the first thing he takes ismal, wraps it nicely, and puts it away. They're very, very makbid, and nothing happened to it.
Even
so,
the blade is disposable most of the time.
Oh, yeah? Okay, so, yeah, so so that's interesting. So then I'm not sure.
No, the blade is
the
scalp nowadays. So makes sense. Yeah. So it's interesting. Okay, so then there's really no purpose for it afterwards. Once it's disposable, then there is right. So either way, yesterday what I was told the observation was that Rabbi Kaplan took the blade and covered it right away because he's makpid. So this machlokas, that the Yam Shel Shlomo says that Ismail is not muksa, because you're able to use the object in theory, can be used for cutting food. But the Taz says, I don't care what it can be used, I care about what the guy's mind, what the Das is, what the mole is thinking. No mole in his right mind will ever use it, and if he does use it for something else, he will not get another job doing that. So you keep it very, very exclusive to the purpose of Mila, and that's the definition of muksa, machmas, something that's not only something that's expensive. I imagine the blades, even the non-disposable blades, are not that expensive. But the definition is not, even though it's a misconception, because machmas cheson kis means it's going to be a loss of money. If someone's careful that it's not used for something else, that's the definition of machmas cheson kis. And therefore, most posts can assume that intrinsically there is an isra, there's a muksa rather, to an isma.
Isn't that the usual classic definition of an object that...
Yeah, I'm just pointing out, but some people think it's based on something that's expensive. You know, my... What?
That also? If he's miyachid lo makom?
If he's miyachid lo makom, then therefore what?
Doesn't that mean that it falls into that category?
Oh, yeah. If he's saying he puts it in a special place where no one should be, or no one uses it, that would be included in that. But A phone would be an interesting question, because phones are expensive. They could be a few hundred dollars. But at the same time, everyone lets their children play with it. Because they have these protections, and what? Morty doesn't. Morty's very makbel.
A few hundred.
More?
$1,000.
Really? $1,000? What? You guys spend $1,000 on a phone? We need to have a schmooze about this, guys. Okay. $1,000 for a phone? That's crazy. Okay. Okay, mortgage. Anyway, so it's a lot of money. Okay, it's more than $1,000 for a phone, and people are willing to spend that. At the same time, everyone lets their children play with a phone, perhaps because it's protected well with the guards and the screen protectors, who knows what else. So people are not that makbid on the use of the phone, but it costs a lot of money. So that's perhaps for another topic, how to define what the category is of muksa, machmas, chesr, and kis. But
who's the one opposite the Taz?
That's the Yamshel Shlomo. Yamshel Shlomo. Shlomo Kluger, he wrote a wonderful sefer. He's one of the earliest achronim on Gemara, Psak Halacha on Gemara. He happens to have a fascinating hakdama to the Yamshel Shlomo. He talks about in the beginning about the concept of Ve'elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, that this person's right, that person's right, even though we're saying different things. So Yamshel Shlomo has this idea in the beginning that how is it possible, everyone asks the question, how is it possible that I say Mutter, you say Aser, I say Tamar, you say Tar, and it's all from a Kaddish Baruch Hu? So he says that Kabbalah Satorah, so at Har Sinai, we know there are kolos of Brachim that came out, and everyone was able to see the kol, something that was never seen or took place in history before or after. So he says that each kol represented a certain pipeline of Chachma. And each neshama, all our neshamas were present at Har Sinai, so we were able to tap into a certain kol that spoke to us. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu was given this, and there was Machlokas later on. It was all given in Har Sinai, 70 different Panim LaTorah on each sugya, so we tapped into certain kochos that we spoke to. Now, had a paskin, that's based on a whole other category, a whole other topic, had a paskin. But in terms of being Elu Ve'elu, it all came from the Har Sinai all at the same time. That's Yamshel Shlomo. What? He doesn't describe the Brachim. So then the fourth, so right now we have three shitas. The three shitas are either it's, everyone agrees right now, it's muksa. Yamshel Shlomo says it's not muksa at all. Number two is it's muksa and afterwards you have to drop it right away. Number three is Magen Avraham, it is muksa, but once you use it, you'll have to carry it to wherever you want. But then there is the fourth shita, and that's the Ramah. Now the Ramah is based on the Gemara and Beta firstly, that we start off with. That the Gemara asks the question, Yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos or ein muksa l'chati Shabbos? Is there such a thing as half Shabbos or not? And as someone mentioned earlier in the week, there's unfortunately a different understanding of half Shabbos nowadays, but we're talking about muksa half Shabbos, not talking about texting chas v'shalom on Shabbos. So the Gemara has two conclusions, whether or not we say Yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos or ein muksa l'chati Shabbos. How do we paskin? So the Rosh is clear that since it's a machlokas, we should be, and we're talking about muksa. Muksa is a din derabanan bishel sofer mahalach achar meka. We always go based on the leaning opinion, which would mean that ein muksa l'chatzis Shabbos. Once Shabbos begins and is a davar heter, we can't create that iser further throughout Shabbos. So although, let's say, you had food or fruit that was mutter, it was edible, and then something happened to it on Shabbos, it got wet and ruined, it's no longer edible, you cannot turn that into muksa because we all go based on what the status was during Bein HaShemashos. The Rosh says we're meko because it's a divrei sofim, it's a din derabanan. It's actually on the bottom, the carbon is sandal in the Rosh, I didn't bring this on the Mar Makomos. He says the Rif would agree to this as well. Because the Rif, from a different angle though, Lishna Kama in the Gemara said there is muksa l'chati Shabbos. Lishna Basra, the second opinion, says there is no muksa l'chati Shabbos. And the Rif always goes Basar Basra. What does Basar Basra mean? The latest. See, he says this, there's a fascinating discussion whether or not, or should, do we pass like the Yushalmi or the Bavli? In general. General discussion. Bavli, Yushalmi. And we always follow like the Bavli. There are many times where the Kesa Mishnah assumes that the Rambam holds like the Yushalmi. Rambam never tells us his sources. But sometimes he'll bring a halacha, and the only source that makes sense is based on Yushalmi. So sometimes the Rambam will favor the Yushalmi over the Bavli. But most of the poskim Rishonim hold like the Bavli over the Yushalmi. Why? So there are a few different reasons why. One reason, just to list off the few different reasons, the Ritva in Yuma says, because he says the way it worked was, initially, Bavel was, there were a lot of pogroms going on around in Bavel, and Talmud Bavli, the Torah in Bavel started. They weren't able to have Yeshiva Das to learn properly. But historically, the Ritva points out from a Tshuva of the Rambam, that after the pogrom stopped, in Bavel they had a certain Yeshiva Das, they're able to sit and learn and have some clarity that they weren't able to have in Eretz Yisrael. So the Bavli was a more superior type of Gemara because of the later clarity, a historical point. That's the Ritva's understanding in Yuma. The Rif writes in Maseches Eivrin. You know why Paskin like the Yushalmi, rather the Bavli over the Yushalmi? Anyone know, based on why I'm bringing this in?
Because it's the later
time. Basra, exactly. The Bavli was completed after the Yushalmi. So it says the Rif, since Hilchasa Kibasra, we always Paskin like the later one. Bavli came after the Yushalmi, therefore we Paskin like the Bavli over the Yushalmi. Now the understanding is, you know, we know that with later generations, you read the Sadoros. Were you Paskin like me? Were you Paskin like Rav Moshe Feinstein? Obviously, Rav Moshe Feinstein. So why would there be? Why would you go like the Basra? So the understanding is, it's not me. It's a later authority that was able to see all the previous generations and be able to pick out what became established as a minug, what has been accepted. Not to say the Ravina Rav Ashi were greater than Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel Yochai, all those. It just means that they had a different, broader view of things and able to decide what makes the most sense, or what the Rabbim say, or what was accepted up Pim and Hagim. That's somewhat of the explanation, but not that they were greater, but they had a different perspective. So Hilchasa Kibasra. So it says the Karban Asano, the Rif would agree to the Rosh as well, that Ein Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos, because it was a second, it was a Lishna Bas in the Gemara, Ein Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos. Fine, so that's how we Paskin. So how does this relate to the Ismael? So if you look at the Ramah, this is number 3, the Ramah writes, this is Hilchos Mila. Mutter letaltel ha'izmal achar Mila. You're allowed to carry it after the Mila. La'tznio b'chatzi ha'me'urav. Into an area that has an area around it. V'yaf agav deino tzarech lo od bo'os ha'shabbos. Even though you don't need it anymore. D'ha lo huksa b'in ha'shmashos. Me'achar daya tzarech lo bo'os ha'shabbos. Because you might need it still on that Shabbos. So the Ramah is a little bit confusing. He's saying a few different points here. If you say Ein Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos, he shouldn't need it, because you might need it later on as well. That should be sufficient. So, it's Ramah sounds like he's struggling how to Paskin here. But what comes out here is, if you assume that Ein Muksa L'Chatzi Shabbos, the Ismael would be completely permitted all of Shabbos. Because during Banish Mashos, I'm the Moel, I knew I had a Mila the next morning. So that's Mutter. So once it's already Mutter Banish Mashos, it's Mutter the rest of Shabbos. That seems to be what Ramah is trying to understand. Unclear why he adds that later opinion. So what comes out is there are 4 shittas. Let me clarify them all right now. Yamsha Shlomo says, Ismael is never muksa. Whether or not there's a bris that day or no bris, it's a knife. Maybe it's a specialized knife. It's a knife. There is no iser.
You mean afterwards? Not totally muksa.
Totally. It's not muksa at all. Not muksa. It's a knife. No. It's a special. If it's a knife, there's never muksa for a knife because you could always use it for cutting your food. The understanding of the Ramah, seemingly, you hold ein muksa l'chatzi Shabbos, it depends on whether you have a bris mila that Shabbos or not. If you have a bris mila that Shabbos, then ein muksa l'chatzi Shabbos, it's mutter the entire Shabbos. If there is no mila on that Shabbos, it would be muksa the entire Shabbos. So it depends on whether there's a mila or not. And then according to the Magen Avraham and the Ma'aril, it is muksa even when there is a mila. But the question is, do you have to drop it right away afterwards, or can you still transport it once you're holding it to the next place? So this is a machlokas, and the nafkamina is, what do you do with it after the meal is over? But there is another interesting nafkamina. There's a minhag, it's brought down in the poskim, about being memane the mo'el. I have a son, I have 3 sons, and the mitzvah is for me as a father to give a milah. Now, that would be very irresponsible if I gave my child a mila. So, I'm mimane, a responsible, trained, experienced mo. So, I have appointed him as a shliach, because it's my mitzvah. So, for me to fulfill a mitzvah, I need to say, oh, you are my shliach. So, there's a debate amongst the posts whether I have to formally appoint him, do I need to hand him something, you know, when you sell it to a kinyan, exactly, Rav Weinberger, I want him to sell my chametz, he's my shliach to sell it. I pick up a little handkerchief, a yarmulke or something, a garth, or whatever's being used, and therefore I'm mimanehe with a kinyan to be my shliach. You have to make such a minoy when it comes to a bris mila, and the poskim suggests that one should. If you don't, it's still, you fulfill the mitzvah, but it's recommended that one does minoy shlichus. Now, part of the shliach, so, you should do it on Friday, okay, but for a davar mitzvah, you're allowed, very good question, for a davar mitzvah, you could do a kinyan even on Shabbos itself, very good point. So what a lot of the Mullen will do is before the Mila, they'll pick up the knife, b'miman the shliach and hand it over to me to be your shliach. So now, is that a necessary component of the mitzvah that can be used? I'm picking up the knife. I'm not doing the milah. Is that necessary to appoint him to be the shliach, to hand him over that knife that is mal, or is that considered muksa? So it depends on two things. One is, what status of muksa is ismal? Number two is, how essential is it that I appoint him the shliach using this item? So again, if you hold like the Yamshir Shlomo, there's no muksa, there's no shayla. Even if you hold like the Ramah, it's in Bein HaShmashos, it was a muksa because it's roi for the milah. Also, ein chatzi muksa Shabbos, ein muksa chatzi Shabbos. So they quote from here, the Sefer, I have a Sefer, Taurus Bris, which is, of course, all about Bris Milah. So they quote from Rabbi Yashiv, he said that a person is allowed to, the Aviyah Ben, can hand the Ismail over to the Mal to appoint him, because Kaven She'omet Sakin HaMila LeMitzvah. So since the knife is designated for the mitzvah of the Mila, Eino Nechshav Muksal Af Adam, it's not Muksal to any person, Lav Dafka the Mal, to me, or even to some other guy there who wants to get it from the house, it's not Muksal for anyone at that moment. Ubifrat, in particular, Kasher Yesh LeMal Tzarech, that the mole needs it, Shiyagish Lo Adam Acher, someone else needs to pass it to him, that's certainly permitted. So too, when the Aviyah Ben is going to appoint him to be man of the Shliach, there too, Rav Yashiv Paskins, that's completely permitted. But he said, after the Mila, he Rav Yashiv Paskins, that you shouldn't, only the mole himself should move it, you shouldn't give it to your assistant to take care of it. So beforehand, anyone's allowed to use it, because it's, again, getting to the purpose of the mitzvah. But after it's over, only the mole who's holding it, it's biyado, can he transport it. But to give it to his assistant, that Rav Yashiv felt would be inappropriate.
So that means it's clearly on the object, not on the das of the person.
Exactly. There's still intrinsic muksa to the item. There's just the heter before and during the performance of the mitzvah.
The way the Taz, he quotes the Maril at the end, but it sounds like you could hide it somewhere in the room, as long as it doesn't go outside the room. Is that his understanding of the Maharal?
I have to look up the Maharal himself, I guess. I thought I saw quoted in the Darche Moshe quotes for the Maharal. He needs to chuck it across the room. So I have to take a look. I see that's what the Taz is quoting, it's correct. I have to look at the Darche Moshe himself, see how that is. That's the first Darche Moshe in Siman Reish Samach Vav, so we'll take a look there. Perhaps, maybe he says throw it in the area of the room where it's protected, maybe, in some corner. Okay, so now let's talk about, for a moment, the question of the frying pan and the question of the matzah. So the frying pan is just, if you got a chance to see the Daf al Daf, which is a nice Likud Sefer, some interesting questions on Masechtas. So he raises this question about the frying pan. And he writes that, Iyam rinan de heter latalta kadera sheesh basocha meichel hu mishum de mikre kli shal nachtu leheter. If I've got a frying pan and there's some pancakes in it, does that frying pan turn into a kli shal nachtu leheter? And therefore I can move it the rest of Shabbos even with the food no longer in it? Or no, do we say that it's really a kli shal nachtu leiser, it's aser? And only when there's food in it can I move it. But the moment it's been emptied from the food, it reverts back to its muksa status. So he quotes here from the Shulchan Aruch Rav, the Baal Tanya, who says that the heter is only the food that's there. So when the food is there, it's mevatel the keder, it's mevatel the frying pan. It's bittel. So, but be'etzem, the frying pan is really a davar muksa. And therefore, he paskined, he said, it's no different than, let's say you're carrying, lo'aleinu, a child who dies. So you can't, a dead body is muksa on Shabbos. But if you put a piece of bread on top of it, then you could transport the body because of the piece of bread. The bread is mevatel the mace. Somehow, the bread is mevatel the muksa status of the dead body. So too, the food is mevatel the status of the frying pan. But the moment the food is no longer there, the dead body is muksa. The moment the food is no longer in the frying pan, then the frying pan becomes muksa. So Shulchan Aruch Rav paskin that the kedera, the frying pan, would in fact be usur even after one had removed the food from the frying pan.
You mean only if it's removed from the frying pan?
Once it's been removed, right. So then, what about the question of the matzah? So right now, get ourselves back, Pesach's only 5 weeks away or now, 6 weeks away. So now you have, it's Shabbos is Erev Pesach. Matzah Shabbos is Leil Seder. So Erev Pesach, there's a Gemara that says, Yushalmi, that says, that you can't have matzah Erev Pesach. One who eats matzah Erev Pesach is ki'ilu bo arusaso besoch beis chamav. As if a person had relations with the wife he's engaged to, the girl he's engaged to, meaning he jumped the gun. He didn't have any self-control. So here's, well, the guy eats matzah. Wait 6 hours till Leil Seder and have it b'chavivas, have it with enjoyment. Why are you having an Erev Pesach? So Erev Pesach, there's already an iser to have matzah. So now, I ran out of my challah. I don't want chametz in my house. I've got one piece of challah, one roll. So I want to use a matzah. Matzah I don't have to get rid of. I could have matzah in my house. It's Pesach. I just can't eat the matzah. So can I use the matzah as my second, as my lechem mishnah, but I don't plan to eat it? I have one challah which I will eat and get rid of, and one I'll use just as lechem mishnah. Is that allowed? So Leil Shabbos, there was no iser to have matzah Leil Shabbos. There's a minhag not to have it 30 days before. That's a very good minhag, but it's not an iser. So Leil Shabbos, the matzah wasn't muksa. So now does it become muksa? What's the status now later on Shabbos? That's the question. So he quotes here from the Maharshal again, from a different case, that if, let's say, a person shechted for a cholah. A cholah needs food, he needs meat. So you're allowed to shecht for a cholah on Shabbos. And let's say the cholah becomes healthy. The next morning he doesn't need the food anymore. Friday night he needed a meat. You shecht the cow, you salted the cow, you cooked the cow, you gave him whatever he needed. And now you have that same meat Shabbos day. But now the cholah is he's healthy. He doesn't need that meat. He could have some other food that's available. Are you allowed to have it? That would also be, exactly. We're focusing on the meat now, but you're right. The Ismail, the shechting knife would also be a shayla of the muksa machmos chesed kids. That's one of the examples. You don't want it to be any cuts. It would disqualify the shechita had there been a little pagam in it, but you're right. That's like an Ismail in that regard. So let's say you shecht.
It's even worse because you didn't necessarily know before Shabbos that you're going to need it.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, very good. So now you shecht for the cholah, and you have a piece of meat, and now the cholah gets better. And he gets better even before he gets shechted. Meaning the guy was told, shecht me a meat, and then he leaves. And then the guy gets better, but before he actually did the shechita, you check the time, the shechting took place after the guy got better. So really the shechita was done b'davar iser. So he says you're still allowed to eat it, because, again, it happened b'nei shmashos, the shochet had a mind for the chol, it was b'davar mutter at that moment, even though the shechita took place after Shabbos began, but b'nei shmashos, the guy was a chol. So for that cholah, all meat, all animals are not muksa for him. So once Shabbos started in such a way, the whole Shabbos, all meats are muksa. That's the concept the Maharshal talks about. So here's, well, maybe you should say, matzah, b'nei shmashos Friday night wasn't muksa, so the whole Shabbos, it shouldn't be muksa. But then the Maharshal says, even if you want to say that, you hold yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos, something can turn into an iser, on Shabbos, even though it's mutter ben hashmashos, it could transform into this, or you say, yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos. He says that's only with respect to eating. That something could take on muksa halfway through Shabbos, that you can't eat it anymore. But with regards to tiltum, moving muksa, that was never part of the conversation. When we say, ein muksa, or yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos, that's only respect to my hana, my eating. But moving was never a question. You can move anything that was mutter ben hashmashos, you can move during the rest of Shabbos, just questionable whether you could eat that item. So lagabe lechem mishnah, the way he paskin is, the matzah, I don't need to eat the matzah, I just need to have it as my lechem mishnah, to be matalto, to move it, to pick it up. But I don't have to actually eat it, and therefore he says you'd be allowed to use his matzah. But Rav Avadia has an interesting tshuva. Rav Avadia has a tshuva, can you use a frozen challah as part of a lechem mishnah? So he goes back and forth, and he concludes that you'd be allowed to use it. Because in theory, it's edible. But he talks about it has to be roi l'achila. I believe Rav Avadia, I didn't have a chance to look it up again, but I believe he would argue on this psak of this, the author of Daf al-Daf put this together. The Indian of lechem mishnah is not to be able to just move it and have it there. You have to have the potential to eat it. So a frozen challah, if you let it thaw, it's edible. Here, this item, you can't eat it, because if you assume yesh muksa l'chati Shabbos, great, I can move it. But it's not roi l'achila, there's an isser here. And therefore, it wouldn't be allowed. Frozen challah, in theory, you can eat it. Again, with time or the strong teeth or cutting it in such a way, you could break into it. But this, if you assume that yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, you cannot halachically eat this. It's not about moving it. It's about being roi l'achila. In fact, I'll even mention, just running out of time, but just in this last topic, I'll finish with Lecha Mishnah. Lecha Mishnah, one of the things we learn, the source for Lecha Mishnah is from a couple weeks ago, is Parshas Aman. The two Lecha Mishnah fell on Erev Shabbos, so we have Lecha Mishnah on Shabbos itself. Another connection to Lecha Mishnah, another source, is the concept of Lechem Apanim of this week's Parsha, just to bring it to the Parsha, why not? Lechem Apanim. So the Gemara in Brachos, those during Daf Yomi Brachos, a little while ago, we had Daf Lamed Ches, so there is a Lamed Tes rather, there's a sugi about cutting loaves of bread. How many loaves of bread you would cut. So one opinion said that on Shabbos you cut one loaf of bread, and the other opinion says you cut both loaves of bread. So there's a gra that was makbid to cut both loaves of bread at every single meal. So right now we have two loaves of bread at each meal. That's six, right? Two times three. He would cut down the middle of both of every loaf. That gives you 12 now. You follow the math? Two at every meal. That's three meals. That's six loaves of bread. Every meal he cut them both in half. You now have 12. Why 12? As a remez for lechem apanim, 12 loaves of bread. The Arizal has a slightly different cheshbon, how we know the lechem mishnah corresponds to the lechem apanim, is because the custom is to have a loaf of bread shaped like a vav. It's a long line. It's a vav. So we have two vavs. So six and six is 12. So that's how he has the cheshbon of having lechem apanim. Either way, it seems from the poskim that lechem mishnah is not simply there as just to move it. There's a significance. It's supposed to be edible. And therefore, I would think, if you assume ein muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, so then you could certainly use the matzah. Because you could even eat the matzah maybe not. Even if you assume ein muktzeh l'Shabbos, it may not be muktzeh anymore, but the muktzeh, now there's a new issur that kicks in of kabbalah rusaso b'beis chamov. So it seemed that whether or not you paskin yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, or even ein muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, it would seem that you would not be able to use that matzah as a second loaf because there's an issur to eat it. Lechem mishnah must be something that at least that's roi to be eaten. But since there's halachically an issur here, I would imagine you could not use it on Erev Shabbos. Okay, we'll stop here, and I'm not sure what we'll do next week, but again...